Okay, we're going to call Senate Finance to order. Let's see, Thursday, April 17th at 2:20. With us is Co-Chair Kelly, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, and Vice Chair Fairclough, and myself, Senator Meyer. There are some bill signings going on today, so people will be kind of coming and going. In fact, I think that's where Senator Bishop is right now. So we'll start. We're going to start with some bills previously heard that hopefully will move fairly quickly, and then we'll start the new bills. First one would be the massage therapist, House Bill 328. So if you could bear with us for just a minute here as we pass on some bills that we've already heard. So the first one is House Bill 193, and this was first heard in February. It's been a little while ago, and the committee members may recall that we adopted a Senate Finance Committee substitute version P, which included vehicle rental tax in addition to the tobacco tax, tightened up language about sharing tax information and confidentiality, and members should also see a resolution for title change. So if the sponsor would come forward, let's see, Dirk, yeah. Thank you. Okay, Dirk, let's see. Did you have any comments on this bill? I know it's been quite a while since we heard it.
No, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to walk through the bill again or go through the sections, whatever you'd prefer.
No, it's a fine bill. We just didn't want to move it too quickly. Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate CS for House Bill Number 193 Finance 28-LS0714/P from committee with attached fiscal note, attached Senate concurrent resolution for a title change, and individual committee recommendations.
Okay. Any objections on House Bill 193 title change moving from committee? Seeing hearing none, bill passes committee. Thank you, Dirk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we'll take up next House Bill 305, Junk Dealer and Metal Scrapper License. Okay, Mr. Wright is here. This last time this was heard was April 1st.
Is that a portent of things to come, Mr. Chairman?
What, April 1st?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe so. No, we like your bill. Did you have any additional comments, Mr. Wright?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Tom Wright, staff, Speaker Chenault, no comments. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Committee members have any questions? I don't think we did anything to it either. Something's wrong here. Okay. It's a zero fiscal note. Okay. Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for House Bill Number 305 Finance 28-LS1449/R from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations.
Okay. Is there any objections of the bill moving from committee, House Bill 305? Seeing hearing none, bill moves from committee. Let's take a brief at ease. Okay, Senate Finance is back. Before us now is House Bill 231. I know this wasn't on the schedule, but since the Speaker and his trusty staff is here, we thought we'd go ahead and just take it up. It's an act eliminating Department of Revenue's duty to register cattle brands. We didn't make any changes to this either. Well, we're letting you off awful easy, Mr. Wright. Mr. Wright, why don't you put yourself on the record?
For the record, Tom Wright, staff, Speaker Chenault.
Okay. Does everybody remember this bill?
Distinctly.
Distinctly, okay. Do you want this bill moved? Mr. Wright?
Say, much obliged.
All right, we better stop while we're ahead here. Senator Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill number 231-28-LS1095-A from committee with attached fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Okay, any objections for House Bill 231 moving from committee? Seeing here none. Thank you, Mr. Wright.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Christine.
All right. Okay, so get back on track here. I think the only one that we haven't heard yet, or the one that we, only one we've heard, haven't done anything with yet, is House Bill 121. This is the commercial fishing agricultural bank. We heard this bill, had quite a bit of discussion on this bill. Excuse me. Is there any other questions for the sponsor? Is there any changes anybody would like to make to the bill?
Chairman, are you ready for me to move the bill?
Go ahead. Well, hold on. Brief, please. Okay, we're back. We have House Bill 121 before us. Senator Faircloth, did you have additional questions?
Mr. Chairman, I was going to ask about the repeal language. I know that we've discussed it a little bit when we had the bill before us, and I was wondering if the sponsor knew what the original discussion was, in addition to the state actually lending money in the first place.
Senator Faircloth, through the chair. For the record, Michael Paschal, staff to Representative Feige. And it's not something I obviously participated in that conversation at the time it happened. The only thing that I was able to surmise in my looking into that issue was that the state had an investment in the bank, and the money the bank was using was state money initially and, of course, was repaid. But beyond that, I don't have any other information.
Chairman, if I might.
Go ahead.
If the state were to withdraw the permits that the bank is the foundation of the bank, would the bank be able to function?
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, I do not know the answer to that question. Ms. Kling may be online. I'm not sure. She was waiting for a plane. She would be better able to answer any questions about the bank operations and its financial status.
You said Leela?
Leela, yes.
Yeah, Leela, are you online?
Yes, I'm online.
Okay, if you could please speak up a little bit. Did you hear Senator Faircloth's question?
I would ask that if she could repeat it for me, I would appreciate it.
Okay, go ahead, Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. I asked whether if the state took back the permits that were being used to back the bank, could the bank still function?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, if I understand the question, and I'll repeat it as I understand it, if the state were to withdraw CFAB privilege as an agent to take the permits as collateral, would it be detrimental to the bank? Is that what I'm understanding?
That's correct.
Okay. Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, if that privilege were to disappear, it would have a severe and negative impact on the bank for future operations.
Okay.
The issue that we're grappling with is what you said in your testimony as far as a desire to hire a lobbyist. And the repayment of that loan, which has been done and very much appreciated, is a reason that has been brought before this committee as a reason that you should now be able to have to hire a lobbyist. And so the nexus is being drawn, at least for some members of the committee, that you really still are in operations because of a state asset that you're using with the bank. And there's trepidation, at least from me and possibly others on the committee, that state asset creates a conflict for us if you have a lobbyist that is coming to Juneau trying to impact what we do. So we're just trying to get clarity on that connection, just so that you know the thoughts that are going on. I guess my last question, Mr. Co-Chairman, would be, what would a lobbyist do for you that you can't do already?
Senator Faircloth, the gist of it would be to kind of be our eyes and ears and voice in Juneau, in our absence, even with regard to the legislation that you have before you, although that would be a small part of it. We don't generally introduce a lot of legislation, but it's just to monitor the other legislation that goes on. There's been occasions over the years that CFAB is affected by legislation that is introduced down there, and so to be able to handle these things remotely for us without us having to have a person go down there to, be staffed down there who doesn't have the expertise. We will still be in Juneau, and we will still be actively involved in the process when just because we maintain that relationship. But this gives us somebody who's on the ground who's able to have a better understanding of it and to be there in person, sometimes at a fairly quickly or fairly short notice, I guess.
Mr. Co-Chairman, if I might, is there anything in state statute that prevents you from hiring a government affairs person versus a lobbyist?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, I'm not aware of any. And, you know, just if I might offer a slight explanation here, up until the legislation was introduced in the 90s, I believe, by my recollection is, and I'm going from memory, which isn't that great right now, but it was Senator Pierce that introduced this legislation that CFEB was included in, and my understanding was at the time that it was strictly because of the state dollars that were invested in CFEB, and they didn't want us using, or us and other entities like us at the time, using state dollars to pay lobbyists. And prior to that, that there was no prohibition of this type up until, I think it was the mid-90s, early 90s, this was done. So, you know, I don't know if that helps at all.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Okay. Well, if there's no other questions, comments, Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for House Bill number 121, Finance 28-LS0491/Y from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations.
Okay. Any objections to bill movement out of committee? Seeing here none, bill moves out of committee, and we'll take brief at ease.
Welcome back. We're on the record. The next bill that we're going to have before us is HB 328, which is the board and licensing bill for massage therapists. We have a number of people from the profession in the committee room here. Could you all raise your hand? How many of you? Okay. Now, who's your, is it Amanda Linser? Amanda, could you come up?
I'm on the phone.
Oh, you're on the phone, Amanda. Oh, okay.
Yes.
We're going to start off with testimony from you, and then I'm going to take, because we're getting late, and I want you guys to have a shot at getting your bill through, because I know it's important to you. We want to make sure we don't slow it down by loving it too much, okay? So first thing we're going to do is hear from Amanda, and then we're going to see how much time we have, and if some of you want to make comments, that's fine. Absolutely, it's your right. I would just ask that you do it as quickly as possible, because we can probably get this bill moving for you if we don't take too much time. Amanda, go ahead and talk to us.
All right, for the record, I'm Amanda Unser. I am the AMTLC chair. We represent over 600 therapists statewide. Obviously, we want this bill to pass. For Finance Committee, we're very aware of the fees that are implied with licensing. We're prepared for those fees. And with respect to your time, I will just leave it up to any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Amanda. We'll take other public testimony. If you want to come up and talk, why don't about three of you come up at a time in that way? Oh, we have a list. That's even better. Is this Representative Nagyak's bill? It hasn't been heard? I'm taking over for the chairman while he's out. Representative Nagyak, could you come up and talk to us? Thank you, Representative Nagyak. Go ahead and present your bill. My apologies. The two co-chairs switch back and forth sometimes, and when you jump right in the middle of it...
We're getting close, that's why.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Could you get the microphone a little closer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Representative Benny Nile. I'm here to ask for your support for the Committee Substitute House Bill 328. House Bill 328 establishes a board of massage therapists and provides regulation for certification. Additionally, the bill seeks to provide ethics standards, accountability, business development, grievance processes, and a greater access to therapy. This bill will also give massage therapists the freedom to directly bill insurance. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your permission, I have my staff, Mary Schlosser, to help answer questions.
Okay. Any questions from the committee?
I'm sorry?
No questions from the committee?
I can't hear.
Go ahead.
For the record, Chairman Maria Bottles-Schlosser, staff representative Nagyak, he apologizes. He needs to head down to the floor. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Nagyak.
Thank you.
Did you say it was Marie or Mary?
Mary, Mr. Chairman.
Mary, okay. We've got Victoria Dance. Victoria, where are you? Would you like to testify? Yes. Certainly.
Chairman Kelly, Vice Chairman Faircloth, and members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me to speak today and to go on record during this very busy time. My name is Victoria Dance, a massage therapist licensed out of state since 1984, when I also became a member of the AMTA. I did my graduate work in education. I was director of continuing education at the Desert Institute of the Healing Arts and interim director of education at the Heartwood Institute. I served on the AMTA Council of Schools in 2002-2003 during the Arizona legislative effort, and I happily moved out of that dry desert to the rainy Juneau, so I can't complain today, 8 years ago, and I've been working at a medical clinic as a massage therapist here in town for the last 6 years. I actually speak for many people who aren't here today, and I have another list as well, and with great respect for for the coalition. There is an estimate of 600 members, massage therapists in the state, but the coalition did a survey of 43, and 19 of those were overwhelmingly supportive, and 17 if it's done right, so I'm here for the done right part.
Okay.
I think that the bill's a great start in bringing our alignment, bringing our profession into alignment with the licensing programs. There are a few pragmatic issues that I and several other therapists have concerns about, and those are that the bill doesn't reflect current industry standards for competency. The fees are high, and this Practice Act will not enable massage therapists to bill third-party insurance claims, and that's one of the purposes of the bill. So, if I might take just a couple more minutes to outline those. The entry-level analysis project, referred to as ELAP, is the only source of hard data that establishes a competency for education hours, and that is 625. When this bill was written, they did not know that. Those recommendations came out just in February. But I wanted to go on record to establish that that is the only hard data for competency. The 500 figure was, in 1984 when I graduated, it was 1,000 hours, and that was an arbitrary figure. And then they cut it down to 500 20 years ago to get bills through, but as an arbitrary figure. So again, 625 is the figure that they've come up for basic skills and public safety. Before massage began to be used in medical offices, 500 hours of training satisfied that what was needed to do for relaxation massage. But that's not the case now. And my concern is that when this bill passes with 500 hours, that if eventually insurance companies do allow massage therapists to bill third party, these therapists that graduate with 500 hours would not be competent to do that. The people that you have heard that this bill has had testimony from are established, experienced professionals that are some of the best experienced massage therapists in the state, and so they would feel very comfortable, of course. But I'm thinking, because I'm in education, of the entry-level students who don't have a voice in this, really. They're a stakeholder, and that takes me to the fees, which I think are very high. Would it be a burden? These kids get out, not just kids, but part-time older adults, have student loans to pay off. They're starting a business, and the fees are very high. Right now, for instance, I pay $90 a biennium, and 53% of states have fees of $100 to $150. So that's the situation now. People are getting their licenses out of state or municipally licensed in Valdez, Palmer, and Fairbanks, and Anchorage. Over three-quarters of boards are in deficit, and there's no ceiling on the fee increases due to an investigation.
Can I get you stopped just for a second?
Sure.
Marta, can we get that a little closer to her?
I think we can do it. Is this better?
You're doing fine. It was just a little tough to follow along. Go ahead. That's better, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much. As Senator Fairclough has said many times this week, investigations are a real problem for the licensing boards. And I'm particularly concerned about how our fees may go up, because to put it delicately, well, this is based on social work board, but there are no social work parlors. So I'm concerned about investigations that would make our world be vulnerable to because of that particular situation that we have, and that's nationwide. In Arizona, for instance, the board has to deal with about 12 a year of these kind of things. In West Virginia, they had an investigation that was $200,000, and it really killed their budget, and their fees went up. So I know you can't predict fees, but I'm more concerned about that. And then the insurance thing, again, with due respect to the coalition, a lot of the experience in billing insurance has been from people who have worked in Washington. And Washington is the only state in all of the 43 states that are have boards, licensing boards, that has a mandate to allow massage therapists to third-party bill. And that happened by a fluke. So unless one of the reasons I'm going on record about this is that in the hopes that if the purpose of this bill is to allow therapists to bill third party, then something else has to happen besides just this bill. It's like having a car with no motor. This bill is going quickly through the legislature, the committees, but when it gets out, it won't have a motor. And then, of course, it doesn't sunset for 4 years, and by that time, we'll have paid $1,000 in licensing fees. So it's kind of like being asked to test drive a car with no motor and paying $1,000 to do it. So just to sum up then, this bill is a little weaker on public protection because of the education requirements. It also allows online CEU and CPR courses, which I believe are inappropriate for a hands-on profession. And there are potential exclusions. Entry-level graduates and part-time therapists will be burdened by the fees. So established urban therapists will benefit most, but to grow the field, support Alaska's share of the 120 new therapists that come out of this career yearly. Perhaps the bill could be worked on more, especially in the areas of public protection, and maybe some of the accounting problems worked out over the interim in the LB&A subcommittee. And then I hope that the bill maybe could come back and really promote the profession that I love dearly and the people I speak for to love dearly. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Question? Mary, could you come back? you. You can go ahead and sit back down again. Thank you. Mary, could you address some of those concerns that were brought up?
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, this is Mary Babasuk-Schlosser, Staff Representative Navayach, and to the best of my ability, I'd be happy to address some of these concerns. I'd also like to call upon Amanda Unser, who's on the phone, who is the president of the coalition, to, or the chair of the coalition, to address some of these concerns also.
Go ahead, Amanda. You still online?
Yes.
Okay. Amanda, could you go ahead and address some of those concerns, please?
Yes. One of the first concerns was that the education doesn't reflect standards. 500 hours is a nationally set standard. Being that this is a new bill, we wanted to start with what was the national standard, and we can grow from there. Also, the board will be implementing continuing education, so upon each renewal, therapists will be required to have so many hours of continuing education that will be set by the board. The next concern was the fees. The coalition is concerned about keeping costs down. Right now, we're estimating $550 every 2 years, which would be $225 a year. It's in this reason and within national standards. We look forward to working with the board and continuing working with the fees that are associated. The next question was, to add to that, the fees are the equivalent of 4 to 8 massages over a 2 year period and are a tax write-off. So really, in the long scheme of things, it's a day of work to cover licensing fees that are able to be written off in taxes. As far as the It's also a growing industry, estimated at 20% growth by the year 2020. As far as the massage parlors are concerned, that would be a criminal investigation, which would take place from an appropriate entity such as the troopers or the local police departments. With billing insurance, it's actually up to each individual insurance company and their policies on whether or not they choose to accept massage therapists as preferred providers. Most will allow it and encourage it. And then the online courses for continuing education and CPR were added in so that we could cater to rural therapists and make it easy for them to obtain their education without having to travel a lot because, as we all know, there's a lot of geographical restrictions in Alaska. I'm open for any further questions.
Thank you, Amanda. Questions from the committee? Senator Fairclough?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amanda, could you please speak specifically to the first question of the on page 3 of the bill, under qualifications for a license, it was indicated by the previous speaker that 500 was the national standard, and I believe she said in February that was changed to 625. Is that accurate?
We have not received anything from AMTA or ABMP about the change of 500 to 600. The board will have the ability to change that, though, if we see necessary.
Amanda, I think that I need to know that. Is there a website that you can go to check to see if that's accurate?
Yes. As of right now, 500 is still what is being put out from AMTA, ABMP, and the National Association of Massage Therapy.
Thank you.
Questions? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure who to go ahead and ask this about, but whenever you have a board with licensees that are underneath it and you have complaints that are there, what kind of complaints would you have against a massage therapist?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I think that would be to be determined, but from some previous testimony, these parlors maybe some of the first complaints and things of sexual nature or inappropriateness in a massage establishment, what might be a complaint? that I agree with you. I've never had a complaint after my appointments.
I think you made the point earlier that it's that would be a criminal issue not related to the profession of massage therapy. Senator Fairclough? Excuse me, Senator Bishop, was your hand? Oh, okay. Senator Fairclough?
Thank you. Back to Amanda, if I could ask you another question. It was indicated that only Washington allowed third-party billing to an insurance company. Can you speak to that more explicitly? Does massage therapy have its own medical code so that it can be coded appropriately with insurance companies? That's my first question. And then the second would be, would a doctor's office in association with a licensed massage therapist bill, or how would that work?
Okay, as the codes go through the chair, I'm sorry. We do have specific codes for billing, so we would have to abide by those. Also, with the doctor's office referring to a licensed therapist, some insurance companies require that you have a referral before they'll cover the therapy. Other policies state that you have X amount of visits per year that you're able to use. Sometimes they leave it up to medical necessity. So again, it depends on the insurance company and the particular policy and how they choose that. But once there's a state licensing, the insurance companies recognize you as being able to bill.
Senator Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, do we have the Department of Law online?
We do not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Continue public testimony.
That was it. Everyone else is for questions only.
Close the public hearing.
And just a moment. Amanda, I had a question for you. What the fees? What are the a normal set of fees in the lower 48? For licensing?
Right now, the national average is $250 a year, so we'll fall right in line with that.
Okay, all right. You may have answered that already. Okay, Senator Bishop?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is Section 10 on page 10 of the bill, is that the grandfathering section? That's what I refer to it. You call it transition, and it spells out.
The chair, yes.
Okay. All right, this seems pretty straightforward. Thank you.
If I may, really quick, I wanted to clarify with the insurance question that we have had the people from the Division of Insurance have testified in other committee hearings that there would be no change in the way that they conduct business and that it would be up to the policy and the company to decide.
And take a brief at ease. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this? Mary, are you coming back? Hearing none, public testimony is closed. Go ahead, Mary. Did you have something else to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add that if you look at your maps in your packet, this is the states that regulate massage therapy. And the first unfortunate thing about this map is that Alaska is in the southwest corner of the United States. And also, in another committee, they mentioned that it's smaller than Texas. But the most unfortunate thing about this is that we're behind the curve on regulation, and it really is a matter of professionalism and public safety. Because a massage therapist is not licensed, there's no criminal recourse for inappropriate touching. It has to happen through a civil case. So this bill is a matter of public safety. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and I just really appreciate it. You have taken the time to hear this today. Thank you.
Thank you. At ease. Back on the record, we have Marty Heffert. Marty Heffert and
what's that?
All right, Marty Heffert and Lori Wing. I'm worse than Meyer. And Lori from the Division of Insurance, you're online? Lori and Marty, I was told
you... Yes, sir, Senator Kelly. Mr. Chairman, this is Marty Heffert, Deputy Director, Division of Insurance.
Okay, go ahead. Did you have some input on this?
I was just calling in, Senator, in case there was any additional insurance questions that may come about for House Bill 328.
Well, actually, I'd like to repeat some questions regarding the ability. Does this bill get us closer to third-party insurance paying for the services in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 328 amends Title 8, the Business and Professions, and these changes do not alter or amend Title 21, the Alaska Insurance Code.
Okay. Go ahead.
Additionally, we don't see that 328 does not develop a cause and effect relationship with Title 21,
okay,
wherein if 328 were to be enacted, it would have an impact on the entities regulated under Title 21.
Other questions? Senator Franklin, if you want to repeat the question that you had.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. From a Division of Insurance perspective, we've had a person testify that this bill is hollow, per se, that it didn't have the engine to actually implement a licensed professional massage therapist being able to bill for services either through a physician or otherwise as the bill is written. Is that your understanding, or did you work with the
sponsor of the bill to make sure that this bill would, insurance companies would be able to use our statute and appropriately work with those that are licensed under the statute.
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, the bill does not mandate what a policy should cover, and to the extent that the policies cover massage therapy, that would be between the insurance company that writes that policy. So 328 does not mandate a particular type of coverage, and if massage therapy is covered under the existing, say, Premera or Moda policy, they could have different types of coverages. One policy may have a certain deductible or copayment, and you only have so many visits per year, but that is up to the policy. 328 does not mandate to the extent what massage therapy would be provided.
And I think that's what Mary had addressed earlier. Go ahead, Senator Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, I understand it doesn't mandate it. That wasn't the question. Does it prevent it? It was implied that it was a hollow framework with not really the ability for use, I'm thinking, from the insurance company or from a provider perspective to allow billing. Can you speak to that at all?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, the Affordable Care Act mandates preventive rehabilitative services under the 10 essential health mandates, and the benefit plan that the state was based on was the Premera Heritage Gold Select plan. That plan did include massage therapy, so to the extent that plans are compliant with the Affordable Care Act in the state of Alaska, they would have to cover massage therapy. However, the ACA nor 328 state to what extent that those policies have to cover massage therapy or rehabilitative care.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can you have, can an insurance company, or will an insurance company cover massage therapy services if they are not licensed in the state, if you don't have this licensing mechanism? Mary? I'm sorry, I was asking Mary, but Marty, you could answer just as well. Go ahead.
Senator Kelly, if the policy covers the rehabilitative care right now for massage therapy, then if the policy says that they'll provide coverage for it if it's prescribed by a doctor or if it's medically necessary, depending on what the policy language states, it could already be covered at this point.
Any other questions? Senator Faircloth?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to put on the record I had sent my staff to see if we could find anything out about the hours that were testified to earlier. I pulled the entry level, my staff pulled the entry level analysis that was referred to. It is a report by the Coalition of National Massage Therapy Organizations in March 2012. It was completed in December of 2013. It's called the CORE Entry Level Analysis Project. The project goals were to define knowledge and skill components of entry level education and recommendations, recommend the number of minimum hours of school that should be taught to prepare graduates for safe and competent practice of massage professionals. Mr. Co-Chairman, in the report, it does indicate that each state or each licensing entity that they suggest that that number is 625 total education hours, in addition to meeting the total education hours mandated by individual states. So it is a level, but I'm uncertain whether the actual board has adopted the recommendations inside of the report. So I just wanted to give you that information.
Do you have any comments on that, Mary?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrakhan, I believe that's a survey at this point, that it has not been adopted. The national standard is still, from my understanding, Senator, 500 hours. And also, if I may, Mr. Chair, the board has the ability, once it's established in a year from this July, to make regulations to add additional hours. The 500 hours is a base, and we cannot go below that, but there's no, we can absolutely go above and beyond.
Okay, any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, again, staff are busy working on our behalf on the AMTA's website. It currently states that 500 hours is what's listed, and we're searching for other states that might have adopted something higher, and we can't find it at this point.
Okay. At ease.
Hey, we're back, Senate Finance. We are discussing House Bill 328, the Act establishing the Board of Massage Therapists. Senator Dunleavy, did you have a question?
Yes, through the chair. It would appear that some folks in a lot of industries like such as this, some folks want to be in a licensure type of situation and some do not. And I had asked Mary if the sponsor of the bill, would the sponsor of the bill be interested in having that as a, for lack of a better term, optional? In other words, you have folks that can put their shingle out and say that they are licensed massage therapists. They have all the requirements that are needed. And then you can have other folks that don't do that. And the folks that, if I understand this correctly, the folks that have the license can bill insurance. The other folks are not going to be able to bill insurance. What are your thoughts and what do you think the sponsor would think of potentially amending it for that purpose?
Mr. Chair, through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I appreciate the flexibility that you are looking for massage therapists that would like to maybe opt out, but I think the sponsor's intent and the intent of the coalition, and Amanda can absolutely address this also, is that we want a standard in Alaska, that we want regulation is, you know, can sometimes be annoying or burdensome, but in many cases it's needed, and we feel as a sponsor and the coalition feels that it's needed for all therapists, not just them, respectively. Thank you.
Senator Dunleavy?
So just for clarification, what I'm hearing is he would rather not have an amendment that allows for two classes of therapists.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, yes.
Okay. Just on that point, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy that the industry, because they do fight a reputation problem, because there's really two things going on here that are not related. They're just named the same. And I think the people in the state that are making their living and investing in their education and running professional operations are struggling to get their profession up to a certain level of recognized by everyone that it is a professional health field. And I think we go a long ways to achieving that by passing this bill.
Senator Kirkhoff.
Mr. Chairman, I did want to put on the record that we did find some states that do have higher than 500 hours of required training. As an example, it looks like Arizona has 700. So I just wanted to, it does look like the average is 500. Texas has 500. Washington's 500. Oregon's 500. Idaho's 500. Nevada's 500. So just so that, but there are some that absolutely go up to 1,000, and some it looks like stack from 600 and then stack another 1,000 hours of training on top of that.
Okay, thank you. Senator Fairclough. Yeah, all I know is that all of you could be extremely busy if you stay here in the Capitol much longer. We're all under a lot of stress and strain right now. So it's a very timely topic. So I'm okay with moving this. Senator Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for House Bill number 328, Labor and Commerce, 28-LS1431-C, from committee with attached fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Okay. Any objections? Okay. Seeing hearing none, bill moves out of committee.
Mr. Chairman, just one comment. The amount of time these people have been here today, they could have made a lot of money.
Yeah. Okay, so with that, we'll take a brief at ease while we sign the sheets, and we'll bring up the next presenter, which is the Commercial Fishing Guys, Representative Eaton. Brief at ease. we'll bring Senate Finance back to order. Next bill is House Bill 143. This is Representative Seaton's bill. Welcome, Representative Seaton, to Senate Finance.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Paul Seaton. I'm the representative for the Lower Kenai Peninsula, and appreciate you hearing the bill today. This temporary commercial crew member license has been a loophole which has been gaining exploitation, and this bill just simply seeks to close that loophole. The seven-day commercial fishing license started in 2005, but what's happened is people are getting multiple and sequential temporary licenses, which were meant to take tourists out or short-time participation, and so people are getting multiple ones. So if there's a fishery that is like Bristol Bay, whether it's a 3 or 4 week fishery, they get that and then escape from paying the non-resident commercial fishing license fee. So we have lost about $285,000 from Fish and Game by non-resident participation buying those short-term commercial fishing licenses in sequence. 2005, there were 47 multiple licenses. Last in 2012, it was 1,344. And so, Mr. Chairman, this will close that loophole and make about $95,000 more revenue for the state of Alaska from non-resident fishermen buying the appropriate annual license. But, Mr. Chairman, this does not exclude this seven-day license. People can still buy one, and then if they have to buy a full-year license, they can even put in and submit to the Department of Fish and Game to get reimbursed for the for the seven-day license because they'll have bought an annual one.
Okay. Very good. This is actually revenue positive. Am I reading that right?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
We like those. you have any more?
Yes, I do, but outright on the table now.
Maybe about $1 billion. Okay. Questions for Senator Bishop?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Seaton, as well as I'm trying to go from memory, but this should help bolster the Fisherman's Fund as well. Correct?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, that's correct. The Fisherman Fund gets about 11%, and if you get 11% of $30 license, it's not very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Dunn.
Through the chair, Representative, and just one more time, tell us what happens if this bill is not passed.
If this bill is not passed through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, we can probably look at continual escalation of people taking advantage of the system we let them do, buying multiple sequential licenses. Some people are buying up to 6 7-day licenses now instead of the $250 non-resident annual annual license.
Okay, great. Senator Bishop, any more?
Well, just a comment, because that also puts a strain on the Fisherman's Fund, because that is a dedicated fund from territorial days that picks up the medical costs of some of these fishermen that might be on an uninsured boat or something, and so we don't want to see that get that fund dwindle down either.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. Representative Seaton, I see the effective date is January 1st, 2015. Is that for convenience? Is there a reason we're not going after this coming season? I guess the other question I have is, how do you obtain a crew member's license versus a sports fishing license that is readily available?
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, these licenses are obtained just like a sport license. They're sold at many vendors around. Currently, they're in paper form, but in the future, they're going to go to electronic format. Department of Fish and Game is here, could answer those questions, but what we were trying to do was stop a problem from continuing to develop and trying to do something when the licenses are already printed, the regulations aren't in place for a partial way through the year. So what we were trying to do is make sure that we could institute it smoothly and effectively.
Additional?
Reef it is. We're back. Additional questions for the sponsor? I thought you were done. Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Comey, Chairman. Representative Seaton, when was this bill introduced?
It was February 27, 2013.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. That's how we picked up Representative Kutula. Is that your, yeah. Okay, makes sense. Okay, additional questions for the sponsor? Seeing none, thank you, Representative Seaton.
Thank you.
Anyone here in general wants to testify? Okie dokie. Anybody online? Okay. Then we'll close public testimony. Is there additional questions, comments? Fiscal notes, great. Okay. Senator Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for House Bill number 143, Finance, 28-LS0520/Y, with attached fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations.
All right. Thank you, Senator Faircloth. Any objections? Seeing none, hearing no objections, bill moves from committee. Thank you, Representative Seaton. Or Louis, I guess. Yeah, thank you. Okay, let's take a brief at ease.
Pull out the compass from that jet. I got the compass.
Next, I'm going to go back at ease.
Miranda, could you come here?
Back on the record, we're going to be taking up House Bill number 282. It's the Landlord-Tenant Act, and there was, we'll go ahead, Brandon, you can present the bill, and then we're going to have public testimony, and there's somebody here in the room. Who's, would you raise your hand? Are you going to testify on the Landlord-Tenant Act? Good, okay. Go ahead, Brandon, and do that, and then after you're done, the gentleman in the that's going to testify can come up. I don't think we have him signed up yet, do we, Marta? Could you?
Yes.
Okay, Brenda, go ahead.
Thank you very much. My name is Brenda Hewitt. I'm staff to Representative Doug Isaacson, who apologizes for not being here. And I want to thank the members of the Senate Finance Committee for, with your heavy schedule, taking time to get our bill heard. In the interest of time, I don't know whether you'd like me to go through a sectional to give you just highlights.
No sectional, just let us know what the bill does.
Okay. The bill takes in several highlights that were requested by both landlords and tenants and property managers. So we've been working this bill for a few months. Many property owners already give a condition statement. When you move in, somebody, like when you're renting a car, somebody will say, oh, there's a ding over here or there's a chip in the glass, so you're not responsible for that. And then you compare that when you are done with your lease and somebody can say, oh, okay. Both tenant and landlord get a chance to look at that premise condition statement. This one allows for a pet deposit, which hasn't been allowed necessarily before, to go more than that two-month cap of security deposits. It defines normal wear and tear, which has been an issue. Alaska is one of only two states that calls it normal non-abusive living, and wear and tear is much more common and makes for a suitable definition. It asks the landlords to keep for separate accounting of deposits, so therefore when a tenant moves out, there is sufficient funds to cover their deposit when they move. It allows there is 14-day return of damaged deposits after somebody leaves right now. One of the things that this does is that it retains that 14-day return of deposit unless there's damage. And then it allows the property owner to get a they're finding that they weren't having enough time to get a contractor in and tell them what the cost was before they had to return the check. So there's up to 30-day return if there's damage. There is a definition for service animals. There is a permission for a rental of dry cabins, which we do a lot of in Alaska. It allows people to restrict the number of people in a dwelling. It allows for an expedited eviction of tenants for illegal activities. So if you have a crack house, they can say within 24 hours, you're out of there. It says that if the landlord professionally cleans a carpet, they can request the tenant to professionally clean a carpet when they leave. And it allows the for an attachment onto the PFD, which they've already been able to do through judgment, but now it actually places it on the list slightly higher than commercial creditors.
Yeah. Senator Dunleavy?
Mr. Chair, access. Is there any change in who gets a key to the premise? If you're renting it, the understanding that I had, at least previously, was that's your dwelling. Is there any change in access? Who can get access? Keys given to other folks, et cetera, et cetera?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, we didn't address that at all in this update of the bill. And I do have Ed Sniffen online from the Department of Law who could maybe address your concerns about keys.
Go ahead, Ed. I don't know if you heard that you were summoned there by Brenda to testify.
Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ed Sniffen from the Attorney General's Office in Anchorage. And I just have to echo Senator Dunleavy, what Brenda said. The bill doesn't affect or change the current requirement as far as access is concerned. So You get keys to your apartment. I assume the landlord has keys as well. But as far as issuing keys to somebody else, this bill doesn't address that. It would stay the same as it is.
Thank you.
Mr. Champion, we're going to go ahead and have public testimony at this time. By the way, Brenda, I like your sponsor statement that has highlights of bills include. 12 years ago when I was co-chair, I put in a new rule that if I couldn't understand the bill by reading the sponsor statement, I didn't schedule it. So you did a great job. Mr. Champion.
Thank you, Senator Kelly, members of the committee. My name is Errol Champion. I'm a director with the Alaska Association of Realtors, among other hats. I'm really just here to answer questions. We work closely with Representative Isaacson to develop the language in this bill. We support it. It's needed. It's time to update the Landlord-Tenant Act, and both the tenant and the landlord is protected, but it's a better bill, so we hope it's adopted and passed by this committee and becomes law.
Okay. Are there any questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Champion. Any other questions from the sponsor to the sponsor's office? Senator Fairclough? Miranda, could you come back?
Welcome, Brenda. Could you tell me when this bill was introduced?
This bill was that's a good question. When did we do this? I worked on it all summer, but I don't think it actually came in. The very first one was Red Cross, version A.
Eddie's? Go ahead. Back on the record. Go ahead, Brenda.
Sorry. Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, it was February 22nd.
Brenda, of 2014?
Of 2014, yes.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I might continue.
Go ahead.
Brenda, can you quickly, right at the end of your original testimony, said that a landlord would step in front of commercial interests. I need to understand that more. So if a bank has a loan against a house, the landlord comes in front of it, or how does that go?
I think on the and maybe I should turn over to Ed Sniffen to discuss this a little bit better, but my understanding is they have priorities on people who can attach PFDs. So, for instance, for child support or victim rights or something like that. And so there's a series of, like, seven in there right now. So this would be number eight. And then the very bottom group is sort of a collective group. And the thought is that when you're a landlord and you aren't paid for your month's worth of rent, it's ethereal. It's not like you can go back and actually repossess a large screen TV or something along that line. So I guess the hope was that they would rise up slightly higher than a general credit.
Senator Fairclough, follow up?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other questions? We're going to hold this until tomorrow, probably. And if members have questions or ideas for amendments, let us know. Get with Christine and Senator Meyer's office. Brenda, thank you very much. We have to close public testimony. It's closed. Unless there's anyone else, let me ask that question. All right. Any other business to come before the committee? We're going to put this bill aside. And the conference committee will not take place at 4 o'clock today. Senator Meyer will be chairing the tomorrow morning's meeting. It's going to be at 9 o'clock, normal scheduled time. Licensing of athletic trainers, regulation review,
some tax credits. I'm not exactly sure on that one. HBO 306, Tesoro Royalty Oil Sale Bill, and the constitutional amendment on the transportation fund. And we will be meeting again at 1:30, and that will probably be when we take up PERS TERS. And I think most of our questions have been answered and asked, but we will have time to, I'll bring David Teal and the administration back for final questions on that. We'll have the bill over from the House at that time, and that'll be the vehicle that the committee acts on. Any other questions, comments, business? Hearing none, we're adjourned.